You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Welcome to the program. Hour one on this Thursday. Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. Glad to have you on board. Stay a while. You can watch. You can listen. You can watch on Peacock. It's free. Download the app. And our great radio affiliates around the country, including that formidable Fox Sports Radio lineup. Got a play of the day, stat of the day. All of that coming up, and a poll question as well. The headlines from last night, the Rays beat the Dodgers 6-4. That series tied at a game apiece. The series takes the day off, so they don't compete with Thursday night football. Giants and the Eagles, the Pelicans waited this long, and they hired Stan Van Gundy. Jeff Van Gundy's on the short list to be the next head coach of the Houston Rockets. Al Leiter from the Baseball Network will join us coming up in a little bit. And it feels like every series we do the same thing. Throughout the baseball playoffs, we read way too much into game one or game two, even game three. And remember, the Rays led the Astros 3-0 and had to go to seven games. Meanwhile, the Dodgers down 3-1 went seven games before they advanced. Los Angeles takes game one. Clayton Kershaw, everything's great. Power by the Dodgers. Then the Rays come back last night, winning game two, 6-4, reminding us that this might be a competitive series. Blake Snell was brilliant on the mound. Brandon Lau broke out of his slump. And now the Rays have Charlie Morton on the mound. Game three against Walker Buehler Jr. III. I'm not going to get fooled again in this series. One way or another, I'm just going to let it play out. Hope it's competitive, and that seems like a very likely possibility at this point. But last night, the Rays did it with hitting and pitching. Here is Blake Snell, the Rays pitcher.
Every game right now is obviously a must win, but I didn't feel the pressure of we really need to win. I felt more of the pressure on myself, like, let's get it going and let's, you know, give this team something to push forward with.
Here's Dave Roberts, the Dodgers manager, on his pitchers.
I think that I still trust them. I still believe them, and they just got to, make pitches. I know that they want to make pitches and execute pitches, so we'll kind of look at the video and see what we can do better at. But they're still going to need to get big outs for us.
And once again, the World Series has the day off. We'll talk to Al Leiter. I don't want to dive into the analytics again, but I'm watching last night, and it was a common opinion, that common knowledge, that this was a bullpen game for the Dodgers. This is the World Series, and I know I'm old school, but I'm not that old. Like, this is game two of the World Series. Can I get my second best starter out there for five innings instead of using five different pitchers in five innings? I would like to use those pitchers again the rest of the series, but Blake Snell pitched extremely well, and then they turned it over to the bullpen. Now it's just go five innings. If even that, but it was a bullpen session last night, basically, and you had all of your bullpen guys pitching an inning. And this is the World Series. It's game two. And a lot of success in World Series history is predicated on having usually two great starters. If you show me a rotation that has two great starters, I'm going to favor that team. Justin Verlander and Gerrit Cole. Randy Johnson, Curt Schilling. Just you have those pitchers, I like your chances a whole lot more. Now I'm not sure because of the analytics here. And I'm open to change. I understand where the game is now. And I'm not going to do this, hey, get off my lawn. These games are too long. A game can be long. It can be 4 hours, but it can be entertaining. These games, I don't care how long they are, they're not entertaining from the standpoint of there is no movement whatsoever. Everybody throws 100. Remember it used to be, man, that guy throws 100. Now, if you don't throw 100, I go, what's wrong with you? If you haven't had Tommy John surgery, what? Do you call yourself a pitcher? Now it's exit velocity, launch angle, and it's basically, let's dig in, I'm swinging, and you're throwing. And the little things that made up baseball, and maybe, you know, the analytics say, you don't win this way. Okay. But last night, I'm watching the same thing. You know, you got guys who swing and miss, and it's okay. Pitchers who, you know, throwing 98, 99, 100. All right. But that's the game. I think as we move forward, and baseball has the oldest demographic as far as fans go, And you got to be careful with that. I'm not saying bells and whistles. Like, I like when players are demonstrative. If you have fun, you're enjoying the game, then great. You should be able to do that. Pitchers strike you out. You want to celebrate? Go ahead. At your own peril. Home run, bat flip, I'm fine with that. Don't throw at the next guy. But just the sheer enjoyment of the game. And you could see this. But it changed. And it felt like overnight with, let's just go to the bullpen for game two of the World Series. I know we used to get caught up in these pitching matchups. Hey, it's going to be Denny McClain and Bob Gibson. Sandy Koufax is on the mound. Now it's, who? And he's only in there for an inning. Now we'll bring the closer and put him in the first inning. Okay, if it's let me get your top of your lineup out and he's only going to pitch one inning and then maybe we get ahead, okay, I get it. I think baseball might be outsmarting itself here. Runner at second base in extra innings, okay. I mean, there's a lot of things that I would do with Major League Baseball. Just I'd tidy it up. You come in from the bullpen, you don't get to throw any pitches. If I bring a guy off the bench to pinch hit, he doesn't get to go, can I get some BP? Like, it doesn't happen. Would you throw me a couple? You know, the shift, I would have a line right down the middle of the field, center field to home plate, you know, catcher to second base, and then you got your second baseman can't be on the other side of that. Your shortstop can't be on the other side of that line. You know, I want to increase offense here. I want movement here. I would love to see the ball put in play. And I promise this will be my last get up on a soapbox and talk about it'll be my next to last.
Don't guarantee it, please.
It'll be one of my next to last. Because Al Leiter's coming up. I want to ask him. And I'm trying to be open-minded about this. Because McLovin says it's the way. It's new. It's the analytics. I mean, this is the way the game is played now. Yeah, McLovin.
So is it possible the Dodgers staff was just too worn out after the last series, so they needed to sort of take the L this game? Bueller would have been 3 days rest. So,
But where the Dodgers were built on great pitching for the last 50 years.
Their options were Gonsolin, Julio Urias, and Dustin May, and May has sort of fallen off. They didn't have another starter, I guess.
I know, but where did they go?
I have no idea. Yeah, I was going to ask you that. How come the options aren't better?
Like it used to be you'd have four starters. Now it's you got to have – and the reason why I really like Tampa this year was the depth of their pitching. I mean, they use everybody, and they've got 12 to 15 arms that they can use. The Dodgers I loved because of their hitting. I wasn't impressed with their pitching. And so now you're getting if one team gets hitting and pitching, they're going to win. You know, Tampa got hitting last night to go along with their pitching. The Dodgers, you know, they didn't have pitching last night. Yeah, Paul.
Walker Buehler on 3 days rest, could he have done worse in five innings and give up six runs? Probably not based on Walker Buehler's background. And also, how tired can a 26-year-old starting pitcher be who pitched a total of 36 innings this season? Yeah, no. 36 innings in the regular season. He usually pitches 220.
But I understand, I don't want Walker Buehler on 3 days rest. If I know that he's so much better on 4 days rest, I feel good, I feel confident about winning that game. It's just, when I hear this, hey, it's a bullpen game. Usually, you don't say that prior to a game, because I know that you'd always want to get into somebody's bullpen, but that's not the case. Yes, McLovin.
One more counter argument. Everything's weird because of COVID, and like the schedules are condensed, so you can't manage your pitching staff like you normally would. Isn't there less rest, less travel days?
But if there's less rest, how about I have somebody who can go five or six, and then I can rest my bullpen? That's what I don't understand. We're playing these games day after day. Now, you do have a day off now, and I think a day off after game five. Am I trying to conserve my bullpen? That would be the only thing that I'm still trying to figure out.
Is this like what the Yankees did against the Rays in game? Was it game two where they kind of tried this? And
yes, and it backfired.
Yeah.
Yes, and it backfired. But, you know, the Yankees go out and buy pitchers all the time. That's what was surprising with the Dodgers. They have great hitting. The pitching is kind of suspect. It really is. I love Walker Buehler. Kershaw, you know, you're going to bank on Kershaw coming back game five and pitching great? I guess so. But that's going to be five innings. And then you turn it over to the bullpen. I'm trying. I'm trying to be open-minded about this. Okay? And that won't be my last rant, I'm sure. 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address dp@danpatrick.com. Twitter handle @DPShow. So we'll talk to Al Leiter, former pitcher, who will join us on loan from MLB Network. The other story was Ryan Fitzpatrick was, well, in his words, he got fired. He got demoted, and Tua Tagovailoa is going to be your starter. And it was one of those where I heard the news, and I thought, you know what? Ryan Fitzpatrick, he's a professional. It feels like he has been a great mentor to Tua, and he'll be okay with this. He was not okay with this. Here's Ryan Fitzpatrick on being fired.
I was shocked by it. You know, it definitely caught me off guard. You know, it was a hard thing for me to hear yesterday, just kind of digesting the news.
Here's the other answer that was pretty hard to listen to, because this guy has been around a long time. He's been a good soldier, by all accounts, a great teammate. He's not a selfish guy. He's a team first guy. But he got hurt yesterday.
Is this it? Like, was that, you know, my last game as an NFL player in terms of, you know, being the starter and going out there and playing? I've been, you know, starter. I've been benched all kinds of different ways. But this organization and what we've been through the last year and a half, this was kind of the first place other than Buffalo where I just felt fully, you know, committed and invested and felt like it was my team, you know, and so to have that, I think that's a lot of the reason why my heart was so heavy yesterday. But, you know, that's the direction that the organization's going, and, you know, I've just got to accept it.
Here was the other reality of this pandemic, because now you're doing things via Zoom, and this is how his day went yesterday.
This profession is interesting in that I basically got fired yesterday, and then my day of work today consisted of me in Zoom meetings listening to the guy that fired me, and then, you know, locked in a spaced out room, you know, with my replacement for 4 hours today. So there aren't a whole lot of jobs that are like that.
That is the reality. Imagine that. You know, but the Dolphins did have a plan. Now, they expedited the plan. Ryan Fitzpatrick probably thought, I can win my way or keep my job by winning my way in. And the Jets, you know, aren't any good. The Patriots are still suspect. The Bills have dropped a couple. And here's the Dolphins, who have had two blowout wins, and they're right there in the mix for a playoff berth. But I don't think their goal is the playoffs this year. Yes, Eden.
I do feel bad for Ryan Fitzpatrick, because now when you watch him, that video of him cheering Tua going into the game, right, it's very clear. He thought that Tua's going in for mop-up duty,
yeah.
You know, and he didn't realize that. But, like, what did Ryan Fitzpatrick think was happening? I mean, he couldn't really be surprised by this, can he?
Well, this is where Brian Flores made the mistake of at least say to Ryan Fitzpatrick's kids found out just like we did. Via text. So they're in school, and all of a sudden, hey, your dad, he got demoted, Tua. And Ryan Fitzpatrick is like, at least tell me. And what happened was, I think a source in Tua's camp leaked this to Adam Schefter. And then Schefty broke the news, and Ryan Fitzpatrick is finding out like we're finding out. And that is wrong. Now, if you're Brian Flores and you say, hey, just so you know, if when Tua is ready, no matter what the record is, no matter how well you're playing, he's going to play. You owe Ryan Fitzpatrick that. That's all you owe him, because he knows you took this guy with the fifth pick overall, and you're looking at these other rookie quarterbacks who are playing. He's going to play. But Ryan Fitzpatrick can't be shocked that it happened. I think he's shocked in the way that it happened. Yes,
he. And how is he like, you know, I basically got fired today, and now I have to look at the guy who fired me and help the guy who's replaced it. Dude, you've done that like 17 times in your career. Like, your whole career has been like up and down, starter, not starter, start back up, move to this team, go to that guy. Okay, am I going to start? No, I'm not anymore. That's been your whole career.
Imagine you see your girlfriend out with another guy, and you run into him, and you go, hey, what are you two doing? Oh, you didn't hear? We're dating now. That's what it felt like. Ryan Fitzpatrick shows up, and all of a sudden, Brian Flores is there with Tua, and they're talking, got their arm around each other, buddy, buddy. Hey, what's going on?
But then imagine that that same exact scenario happened with the last eight people you dated. And then you're like, I can't believe this happened. I just didn't see it coming. Really?
She cheated on me for the eighth time.
Yeah. You broke my heart. For the eighth time. Yes, McLovin.
If it wasn't Ryan Fitzpatrick, would we be ripping him for saying that he was fired? Because isn't his job to help the team win? That's his job. His job is not
to be... He was helping the team win.
Right, but I feel like that's a really non-team friendly statement. Like, I feel like he's garnered such goodwill that we're letting him pass. But if it was a younger quarterback, we'd probably be killing him. Because he's not fired. He has a job to help Tua be great.
He got demoted, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, he got fired from being a starter.
But usually guys don't say something.
No,
like that.
It's a must-lie situation. I think that the honesty is what shocked us there. Because as soon as we found out that Tua was going to be the starter, I said to Fritzy, reach out to Ryan Fitzpatrick. I thought Ryan Fitzpatrick would be, hey, you know what? The kid is, it's his time and ready. Ryan Fitzpatrick is playing well. Not great. He's completing 70% of his passes. And I think he's got 10 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, and they're winning. That's the part when you said Tua is taking over, and Paulie goes, what if I told you a quarterback who just came off 2 wins, is playing well, just lost his job? And I'm thinking, all right, you got me. Maybe Mitchell Trubisky, but then you go Ryan Fitzpatrick, and I go, wow. And then all of a sudden I had this flashback to the Jets game where Tua came in, and they had him as if he was starting the game in one of those rollouts. So he did the same rollout where he injured his hip when he was at Alabama. He ran the same play. And I went, wow, they're getting him ready like now. And I don't know if the bye week was going to be week 11 and they would have waited. But now you have a bye week before you face the Rams. And Tua's got, you know, a good 10 to 12 days to get ready for his NFL debut. Yeah, Paul.
Andrew's right, but it's usually a must-lie situation. A quarterback like Ryan Fitzpatrick would usually say, you know what, whatever helps the team. He doesn't believe this is the best thing for the team. Nobody believes that the person replacing them is better than them. No person who actually competes for anything. And Ryan Fitzpatrick is also almost 38 years old. He knows he's close to last call. You speak differently when you're on your way out. It's like an old guy who doesn't use his turn signal anymore. He's like, well, I'm just going to be honest, because I've been playing the game for so long. Let's just call it like it is. They're making the wrong decision.
Yeah, Todd.
What would be the upside or motivation for leaking it? We better get it out there before they change their mind. Like, why would you put Ryan Fitzpatrick or Tua or the organization in that awkward position that they would get out before the Dolphins can announce it themselves?
I don't know. I don't know if it would have mattered if they did tell Ryan Fitzpatrick. But, you know, all I know is that that's what I heard. That the leak probably was from Tua's camp. And they might have been just excited that, hey, we're starting. Not really thinking, you know, what's Ryan Fitzpatrick going to think? But that's on Brian Flores. Like, you got to at least let him know this is the situation. Ryan Fitzpatrick thinks that he can win his way into another week. And why not? Why wouldn't you think that?
That is how life should be, though. The more successful person should be keep their job. And he was the successful guy. He does give them a better chance to win and has. But it doesn't work that way when youth always wins out.
But I remember when John Kitna was playing for the Bengals and was an MVP candidate because they won 8 games. But they had taken Carson Palmer with the number 1 pick the previous year. And it didn't matter what John Kitna did. He could have won the MVP. And he wasn't going to keep his job. Yeah, McLovin.
Drew Brees and Rivers too, right? Didn't he start playing really well when they drafted Rivers?
Yeah. But then he got hurt. And that's what made it easier for the transition. Yeah, McLovin.
What's the deal with everyone saying they should trade Ryan Fitzpatrick? Do you know how many games has Tua ever been able to string together? His ankles are super glued together. His hip is like, you need Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Does Ryan Fitzpatrick want to be there? That would be my only question.
Do you think he could be?
I don't know if he's that desirable for how many teams. Like, hey, we got to go get him. Hey, we got Ryan Fitzpatrick. I love Fitzpatrick. He's entertaining, good interview. At times a really good quarterback, but I'm not looking at him going, yep, we figured it out. We got Ryan Fitzpatrick here. I hope that his pride is hurt. he'll swallow this pride and he'll be, you know, a great backup quarterback, I'm guessing, to Tua. I would imagine. But I think it was one of those where, God, like I got embarrassed yesterday. At least tell me I'm getting demoted. At least let me tell my family I'm being demoted. He didn't even get that opportunity yesterday. So I understand that sensitivity. And, you know, that was an honest answer. This program, it's a award-nominated program. Brought to you by Traeger, the wood pellet grill. I'm looking at the menu for tomorrow, by the way. Traeger game day menu. Buffalo chicken sliders, Cajun shrimp, green chili mac and cheese, baked pickles and buttermilk dip, baked taco skillet dip, and brats. All on the Traeger tomorrow. TraegerGrills.com/DP Show. Al Leiter tries to explain baseball's new analytics, and I'll listen for a little while. Back after this on the Dan Patrick Show. ZipRecruiter, I always give you a stat of the day, and there's no better stat of the day than 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the very first day. ZipRecruiter is a hiring game changer. That's why you can try it for free. ZipRecruiter.com/Patrick. And I got ahead of myself because let me tell you exactly what they do. Certainly the world has changed and how you hire. You know, there's so many things to worry about when you're trying to run a business. And then the hiring needs, new positions, positions you're already familiar with, but there's only one place to go, and that's ZipRecruiter. You can try it for free because when you post a job on ZipRecruiter, it gets sent out to over 100 top job sites. Then what ZipRecruiter does that's different than anybody else, their matching technology finds the most qualified people for your job and then actively invites them to apply. And ZipRecruiter gets a quality candidate within the first day. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter will tell you that. And don't miss your chance. Try it for free. ZipRecruiter.com/Patrick. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. He's the popular Al Leiter, MLB Network analyst. He won the World Series 3 times. You can watch Al, part of MLB Network's live coverage before and after every World Series game from Globe Life Field, including on MLB Tonight. Al, thanks for joining us here. I've been talking about this. This was a bullpen game for the Dodgers yesterday. This is game 2 of the World Series. I know I'm old. I know I'm old school. But where are we going with pitching in baseball? Or am I missing out on what is the trend already here?
Oh, I don't. By the way, good morning.
Good morning.
You look good. Yeah. I hope this isn't a trend because watching playoff games or any Major League Baseball game with each respective team using 5, 6, 7, 8 pitchers isn't fun watch for me. Obviously, as a starting pitcher, I always lean to give the guy an extra inning. You know, all of this whole debate as to whether it was, you know, the guy had 78 pitches. You know, Clayton Kershaw's a great pitcher. Should we send them out for the next inning? He looked great to me. Yeah, I would send them out for another inning. So the inclination of all of the matchups with the analytics and with all of the reams of data, et cetera, that's being used, they're being pushed now to in the coach's room, in the manager's office, with the discussion that this matchup is better because of X. And I don't like it. I think there should be more of a gut. I know managers are more inclined to have to answer to it because it wasn't a collaborative a decision. You know, it was on a whim. I don't like it. But it also comes to this, Dan. You know, Gonsolin, I think it's a matter of the roster. And as great as the Dodgers are, and for through and through, 28 players this year, but 25-man roster, what that front office has done, Andrew Friedman, is they've created a very deep roster that covers a lot, right? So we've been talking about the Dodgers for the longest time, but the truth is, you know, it doesn't go much deeper than that. And you look at what the Dodgers did this winter, of course, with David Price, you know, electing to not play really hurt them. And then with Kershaw's back, you know, for him to not be able to go game 2 in the LCS, it created this problem, which is what they have. And you know, you have a good pitcher, good arm, Gonsolin and Dustin May and all these guys that are, you know, on the come, but they're, you know, they don't have four starters, the bottom line, as good as the team is.
I know.
And I don't like it. I'm with you. I don't think this is by design, although these two teams are very analytically driven, which means just a lot of levels of statistics that convince the coaches and manager that this is a good decision. But I think if they had three or four Clayton Kershaws or Walker Buehler tonight, you know, they'd much rather have that guy than to, you know, ham and egg it for a start.
I'm wondering, though, is the starting pitcher, is it five innings now? Six innings at the most, it feels like. Like, how tired can they possibly be? They pitched like 40 innings total this year. This is, I don't know. Help me understand this.
I know, Dan. Look, you're talking to a guy who had in my second full year in the big leagues in April against Minnesota. Dallas Green was the manager of the Yankees. He kept me in for 160 plus pitches. And then after the game, they asked him, they said, what were you doing? I'm 23 years old. They said he was trying to stretch lighter out. Oh, my God. I couldn't brush my teeth or, you know.
I
combed my hair for a couple of days. So somewhere between 78 pitches to 160, somewhere in between. Although I was appreciative of what Bobby Valentine did in game five of can't believe it, Dan, 20 years. I guess I'm getting old, but with the 2000 World Series with the Mets Yankees and Bobby V keeping me out there for the ninth inning, I ended up throwing 140 plus pitches. To this day, I thank Bobby for it. We end up losing to the Yankees 4-2. It's not interesting for me. And it's an easy trigger. You're creating rosters that have a plethora of guys that aren't really good at their craft, but they can throw really hard.
Yeah.
And in doing so, plus velocity, you get away with mistakes. You're going to miss your spots. But if I could get this dude to come in here and throw an inning and a third, get his butt out of there and get the next guy that throws 98. And then it's just this churning and recycling of player development of trying to accumulate arms that throw really hard, but they're really not pitchers.
I brought this up to Jessica Mendoza yesterday. I said, will we have a counter puncher, somebody who goes counter like Whitey Herzog's Cardinals in the mid-80s, where I got speed, defense, I'm going to drive you crazy. We're going to get on base. We're going to run. We're not going to be sitting dead red waiting for home runs. And we got pitchers that are going to have you put the ball in play. Could you see somebody doing that?
Well, we saw with the Braves, you know, I thought that was a heck of a, by the way, the LCSs were great, right?
Yeah.
And the Astros to push it, what they did with Tampa Bay, getting to game seven, and then the Braves being a very good team, but the Dodgers, you know, on paper, definitely better. The Braves ran a lot. I didn't count the total amount of actual stolen bases, but they were trying to push the defense. I love when I see that because I could tell you, Dan, even as a left-hander, as I was, I wasn't great at holding runners. And it was a nuisance. It was a pain. It diverted my attention from the hitter, that me trying to get a hitter out. So I think it will, and it'll only happen with the convincing the GM/owner who pays the bills that this is a good way to go and let's do it. I think you have to, because of the way the defenses shift, you know, with respect to shifting, it's created harder for guys to get the ball in the grass, in between fair ball and the grass.
What do you think of the shift? I was wondering, and I think the commissioner might join us tomorrow, but what if I just had a line that, you know, catcher, second base, center field, and then your shortstop can't be on that side of the line, or your second baseman can't be on the other side of the line?
I like it. And look, there's illegal defense in basketball and football. And, you know, you could create that with, as you described it, somewhere along the line, we could create something, sit down and brainstorm on if we're trying to get guys to put the ball in play more. Apparently, they don't have the ability to go the other way, which blows my mind because I stunk as a hitter. And if I had a huge old hole on the other side, I'd figure out a way to dribble a ball.
But the analytics aren't in your favor of getting on first base. So what I'm told, you know, on-base percentage doesn't matter.
How about if me, you, and three other guys just hit little numbers for singles? Guess what? We just scored two runs, and now we've applied pressure. So, yeah, I agree with you. And they're getting paid by batting .235, hitting 30-plus home runs, striking out 140 to 160 times, and they get paid. So somewhere along the line, they're like, okay, I'm not going to compensate my swing. I don't have a two-strike approach, because if I can launch one here and I'm 1-for-4 with two strikeouts with a two-run homer, that was a great night.
We're talking Al Leiter, MLB Network analyst, and won the World Series 3 times. Over your right shoulder, looks like that's a sports Emmy.
It is. Yeah, this is my little office here.
But is that the sports Emmy that should have gone to us? We were up against you guys 2 years in a row, and then you guys won.
I don't know. I'll see. Although this is for the MLB Tonight.
Yeah,
that 2017 Outstanding Studio Show Daily.
Oh, yeah,
come on.
Yeah.
All right, I'll tell you what. I'll put it away. Put it away.
Man,
I'll bring this one. This is a local one from the Yes Network when I was doing that. Some analyst, outstanding game, something or other. I don't know. Yeah, that's cool. Sorry.
Yeah.
I've been nominated 6 times as a studio analyst. Never won, Dan.
But A-Rod gave out the award that night. And I honestly think, I never saw the envelope. I think A-Rod, and we don't have a good relationship, I think A-Rod just said MLB Tonight. I don't know if you guys truly want it. And look, I'm fine with it. I just need to know the truth, because I think there was a little bit of La La Land going on there that night. It felt like we should have won it. Everybody told us, even people from MLB Tonight.
He is friends with Warren Beatty, so maybe he got some ideas there.
Okay. All right. What are the other awards you got there?
This is my most prized award, 2000 Roberto Clemente Award.
Nice. Nice.
March of Dimes, Branch Rickey.
Ooh.
Some kind of philanthropic stuff.
That's pretty good.
I don't have a dig me room, Dan. This is it. I have some pictures. Some of my friends have dedicate entire basements to stuff.
Who's got the best man cave of all your baseball friends?
Tom Glavine.
What's Glavine got?
He's got a beautiful home in Atlanta that his entire basement is a museum.
A shrine to him?
Not just him, but a lot of stuff of him. But a lot of stuff. No, it's well done. It's very, very nice.
What about Rivera?
I used to collect jerseys at the end of my career for guys that I liked the way they played, the Scott Rolands and Bagwells, Piazza. Others.
Have you been to Mariano Rivera's house?
I have not.
Oh, sorry about that.
How's that look?
It's really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really nice.
It should be the greatest reliever, 100% guy. Yeah.
Is he the most automatic player in baseball history?
Almost.
Like where I know what is going to happen. Now, I know that he had some tragic losses there in playoff games, but for the most part, and nobody could copy. Why couldn't people copy that pitch?
God, I had a cutter. There's guys that have cutters. What Mariano did was his delivery was impeccable. He was the same. If you take a video of Mariano in 95, 96, and then take it right to the end of his career and just superimposed it, other than just being maybe a little heavier and getting older, it was identical. So his ability to be in the same slot and just make the same pitch. And also, Dan, this is the other thing. If we watch, when I watch games, like I'm watching last night, Dustin May is throwing 100 miles an hour. We're going to watch tonight, Bueller. I'm sorry. Yeah, we have a day off. Yeah. Sorry. Thank you. You could get an out. You mentioned about analytics. If we're saying that Dan Patrick, we got to bust him inside, curveball in the dirt, I'm going to try to go inside. That's my intent. And I miss, and you pop one up to the shortstop. So you're going to get a whole analytics team to write it down and got him out, and Dan Patrick popped up to short. I'd miss my spot. And the plan was to exploit your weakness. What Mariano did was he had the unbelievable cutter in that mid-90s range that had late break. And then once you started, he sensed that you were on it, he'd now dot away. Like, he was so good at barely ever being in the middle of the plate. And then he had a unique pitch that at the last 6-7 feet just moved.
But how many pitchers do you think could tell the batter what is coming and they wouldn't be able to hit it, aside from Mariano? Because you knew the cutter was coming and they still couldn't hit it. Who else, if you said, hey, I'm fastball, curveball, changeup, whatever. What pitchers would come to mind?
I think Trevor Bauer tried that.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Didn't he?
Maybe all-time greats I'm looking at. Trevor Bauer, yes. And Zach Greinke, I think, did it too.
Yeah.
Carlton throwing his slider was, you know.
Randy Johnson comes to mind. I think that, you know, he was so imposing. The delivery from low three-quarter slot coming from, like, first base. Like, he was scary. Guys didn't want to face him. They're uncomfortable at bats. Roger Clemens. Certainly Pedro, you know, there were certain guys where you were beat before that. I got a chance to play with Kevin Brown in 96 and 97. We won the World Series in 97, beat the Indians. In 1996, as a teammate, watching live every single start, I hadn't seen a more dominant pitcher from April until the end of the season than Kevin Brown. He could, that year, he could have said, here it is, hit it. And guys just couldn't barrel it. Late movement,
and he threw
plus velocity.
He threw a heavy ball too, right?
Heavy ball, huge sinker, really good slider. Came up with this little split thing. Yeah, he was dominant.
I'm going to submit this tape where you thought the World Series was tonight to the Sports Emmy people. I'm going to sabotage your guys' chances.
Damn it.
Yes.
No wonder why I keep losing that category.
It's great to talk to you, Al.
Yeah, always. Dan.
Thank you, buddy.
Take care. Say hello to everybody.
That's Al Leiter, MLB Network analyst. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Tough day for Ryan Fitzpatrick yesterday as he found out that he had been demoted. He said he got fired. Got fired, I guess, as the starter, but he still has a job. Got demoted, and Tua Tagovailoa is now going to be the starting quarterback. This is what Ryan Fitzpatrick had to say. This is back in August. He said, I don't know how much time it will be before Tua will be in the lineup, Fitzpatrick told the Palm Beach Post. I know that I am the placeholder. We've already had that conversation. I told him, I'm going to do the best I can to lead this team and win football games. And when I'm out there, whenever it is that Tua gets his chance, whether it's early or late or whenever, I'm going to be his biggest cheerleader. Here is Ryan Fitzpatrick and his reaction to the decision.
My heart just hurt all day. It was heartbreaking for me. Flo kind of said what he said and said what he said to you guys as well. And that's the decision and the direction that the organization is going in. And obviously, you know, we've talked in the past, you know, how I'm the placeholder and this eventually was going to happen no matter, it was just a matter of kind of when, not if. And it broke my heart yesterday. And, you know, it's a tough thing for me to hear and to now have to deal with, but, you know, I'm going to do my best with it.
We weren't ready for something this honest. I think we were surprised. I was, because I thought, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, he's been around. This has happened before. Whatever is best for the team, he's really looked up to, admired in that locker room. I think he thought that the way he was playing, he bought himself a couple extra weeks. And I certainly understand it. I just think the Miami Dolphins want to know what they have, and they want to know right now. If they happen to make the playoffs, okay. But their goal is bigger than this, of just making the playoffs. And right now, 3-3, and in that division, you know, they get a chance, wild card. But I think they want to see what they have. Chargers found out what they have in Justin Herbert. The Bengals know what they have in Joe Burrow. The Dolphins, with the 5th pick overall, want to know what they have in Tua Tagovailoa. And the earlier you find out, the better your game plan is of, now what do we do? Now who do we add? Now what do we draft? Now who do we trade for? And I think the Dolphins just kind of sped up the clock, and I think Tua helped that process. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick played well enough to keep his job for a few more weeks. But I think that this was a situation where the Dolphins thought, if he wins a couple more games, it's even harder to get Ryan Fitzpatrick out of there. Yeah, Todd.
I thought it was very refreshing. He didn't badmouth Tua. He never said that he's going to, you know, going forward, not stand behind him. You know, we always, you know, rip coaches or players when they have that generic locker room speak, or they're just saying what we think they need to say to come across like a good guy. He let us see his true feelings, and he felt like he shouldn't be benched yet, and I don't see anything wrong with that. I would love that he handled it that way.
Yeah, Seton.
I mean, I appreciate the honesty, but I was more surprised by his surprise. And frankly, like, just the outpouring of support for him. Like, oh, just the most brutal video you'll watch today. My heart is breaking right now for Ryan. Everybody was just tripping over themselves to just the unbelievable amount of sympathy and support. I'm like, dude, like, he's done this 15 times. What do you mean? Of course he knew this was happening.
You're starting to sound like Paulie.
Yeah, geez, lighten up.
Yeah.
It's like everybody was just like, oh, this is just soul crushing watching him go through such pain. It's like, what? What are you talking about?
We like the Ryan Fitzpatrick story. We do. He's the underdog, the ultimate underdog. Played well. You got the young buck behind you. Here he comes. When's he coming? And not yet. I'm playing well. And then the reason why I felt bad about this, well, not bad, but I understand. I'm sympathetic. His kids found out when we found out. Like, his family found out when we found out. And that's wrong. If you want to tell him he's going to be demoted, then at least give him a heads up. And that's where the Dolphins failed him. And maybe they told him, but, you know, he didn't even get a chance to tell his family, hey, his kids are at school. And they found out through social media. Yes, Todd.
And he's not 25 or anything. You know, career mortality settles in. Like, is this going to be, I'm never going to start a game again? There's other factors at stake that, you know, maybe where he wore his emotion on his sleeve, whether we were prepared for it or not, he may never get an opportunity to start a game again unless there's some injury. And I think that may be part of the reason why he reacted that way.
Thank you, Todd. You guys have my word.
Is that too obvious what you said?
No, I don't.
I don't think you're listening.
I wasn't listening. You have my word that if I do demote you, that I will let you tell your family before anybody is
before demoted. You announce it in the press.
Yes, before I announce it on this show.
Very thoughtful.
If any of you gets demoted, not fired, I mean, you could get fired, but I don't know what you would have to do to get fired. But if you got demoted and, like, I put you in the back and you answered phone calls and Marvin came out and sat in your place. Or Mario.
Sound like you got a plan together.
Not yet, but if it happens, you have my word that you'll be able to tell your family, maybe not your friends, but your family, that you got demoted. Final hour coming up. The name Tim Donaghy has resurfaced, and it's not good. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. I got schooled by a Rush fan yesterday after the show. He actually laid out lyrics from Rush songs and say, I think you owe Rush fans an apology. I apologize, Rush fans. There are some great lyrics in there. Better than Led Zeppelin, let's put it that way. I still don't know what a hedgerow is or whatever that is on Stairway to Heaven.
There's the bustle in your hedgerow.
Don't be alone. Whatever. What's the May Queen or something like that?
Yeah, it's something about the May Queen.
No idea. Stupid. Yeah, McLevin.
I strongly prefer this version of you than the doing the Charleston singing Tangled Up in Blue in the Corner guy. That's so soft to dance, to play guitar. Come on, you don't need those things.
Oh, yes, I did.
We all did.
Not really. I went 0 for 2 years at Eastern Kentucky.
The big O?
I didn't have a date.
Oh.
I went 0 for 2 years.
I don't know that a guitar is going to help you then, pal.
I think a guitar could have helped me at least go 1 for 2.
Yeah, I don't know.
But for some reason, you know, it could have been the long hair. It could have been the acne. It could have been that I weighed, you know, 160. I was 6'3". Didn't have much going. I had no money. I had no car. I didn't have any charm. I had nothing. Yes, a ton.
Is that where the whiff was born?
Whoa.
Would you like to go out sometime where we could see it? No, thank you.
Yeah.
The whiff.
I got caught looking. Third strike so many times. Ha! I'd be like, God, I never got my bat off my shoulder. Horrible. Oh, for 2 years. I mean, it's not like McLovin at Dartmouth.
Hey, I mean,
you
went
1 for 4 years, didn't you?
Yeah, I had one girlfriend for 4 years, but high school, I had the fictional girlfriend in the Niagara Falls area. That's even worse.
I know. Yes, Paul.
Dan, in high school, you guys aren't even close to where I was. I owned a Corvette, and I don't think I ever had a girl in the front seat of it, much less a back seat, which it doesn't have. I don't even have a back seat to not have anyone in. I owned a Corvette. You know how cool that is in high school?
You're right.
It's like a Bears drafting a quarterback. Me getting a Corvette is wasted.
We had one car, 6 kids, and we had an Oldsmobile, like a Delta 98, I think. And my dad had it. I never got to drive it. I never, so like my senior year, I think I bought a car, but I didn't. I had a bike. I went on a date on a bike. Like, how do you pick up your date on a bike?
A little bell. You ring the little ding, ding, ding.
It's a basket. It's not a bicycle for two. I had her get on her bike. We were juniors in high school. Everybody else had, like, Camaros and Transams. You know, Chevelle 396 SS, Roadrunners. And I had a damn bicycle.
Not even a banana seat where you can kind of fit a second person.
No, I didn't have a banana seat where she could have sat on the back and put her arms around me. I had no strategy. Yes, McLovin.
I had a minivan. My mom's minivan. And everyone's like, oh, there's plenty of room in the back.
Whoa.
There to get some action. I'm like, yeah. I can fit the whole Dungeons and Dragons club in here. People said that all the time. Like, whoa, you could. And like, there was no one in that car. My car was lonelier than yours, Paul.
That was the Shaggin' Wagon.
Mathlete road trips.
If this minivan be rocking,
don't
then
bother knocking.
56 sided die be rolling.
People walk by and they hear the noise in there and they're going, whoa, what's going on in that van? Dungeon and Dragons. They're playing a game.
Yeah, Warlock entered the room.
Yeah, you're hearing these noises. Woo! Yeah! Oh!
We just encountered a whole pack of gargoyles. You don't want to come in here.
Yeah, both.
But Fritzy's college, Fritzy didn't attended college without being at college. He was in an apartment building with his mom in college.
Very tough.
He's right in the same boat as us.
He could have been in New York at NYU.
I was in my apartment in Brooklyn with a Heather Thomas and Heather Locklear poster, and that was about it.
Yes,
and he was ripped. He looked like a ripped David Hasselhoff. He could have killed it.
He was a ripped Mark Ruffalo.
If there wasn't any pretty girl I was interested in the neighborhood within a couple of blocks of my parents' apartment building, yeah, it just wasn't.
What a waste of muscles back then, man.
Totally.
Gosh. But you had that look, though.
Little window.
Yeah, I know. Really small window. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR, or stream us live on the Peacock app. The aforementioned Tim Livingston is the sports journalist, creator, and host of Whistleblower Podcast, and he joins us on the program. Tim, thanks for joining us. Let me start with just the idea to take another dive into Tim Donaghy and what exactly happened here with the NBA.
Yeah, well, I think you can break it up. The way we've done it is there's the scandal, there's Tim Donaghy, there's what he was doing on the court, there's the billions, or at least hundreds of millions, potentially billions of dollars that were moving in the gambling community just based off of Tim Donaghy's games. There's that scandal, and there's the conspiracy. There's what was the NBA doing during this time? Was the NBA also manipulating games? Were there other referees involved? How big was this? So we investigate both sides in the scandal and try and just find answers to both.
Okay, what is more intriguing as far as the NBA side or Tim Donaghy's side?
The conspiracy by far. It's fascinating because what David Stern was able to do in 2007 after this came out was silence it pretty quickly, right? I mean, he actually, I think we proved pretty conclusively that the NBA actually leaked news of the Donaghy scandal. And they did so because they knew the FBI was investigating the scandal. So we dive into this in the podcast. But the NBA brilliantly, I mean, who would think that the NBA would release the news of the biggest scandal in the league's history? But I think a lot of people, and myself included, believe that they did. And so that's kind of where it starts. And if you look at David Stern, who was such a brilliant leader in crises, whether or not he was ethical throughout, we can debate. But Stern's ability to make this scandal go away is really what this podcast is about. Because in 2007, this could have really blown up. This could have been a really potentially just brand-altering event for the NBA that could have, you know, really brought them closer to WWF. And he just, through his brilliance and cunning.
Well, I thought what was great, the marketing ploy to say, he kept telling us it was a rogue official. It was a rogue official. It was never, you know, just an official or Tim Donaghy. It was a rogue official. So he wanted, this was a standalone one guy, nobody else. Is that true? Is Tim Donaghy the only guy who should be under investigation or was under investigation for betting on games?
Absolutely not. I mean, again, in my opinion, if you look at just everybody that we've interviewed over the course of the scandal, and there's so many people, Dan, as I'm sure you can imagine, that had a lot of interesting things to say, but wanted it kept off the record. I wish everybody, and hopefully after this podcast comes out and all this comes out, we can get people like Mark Cuban and other referees who can corroborate a lot of what Donaghy's saying on the record. But if you look at, we interviewed Michael Franzese, who's a former capo in the Colombo crime family, who says that he had two NBA referees who were not Tim Donaghy on his payroll, as well as NCAA referees. And if you look at the mafia at that time, it seems like this was just commonplace. There was referees left and right who were using their whistles to influence basketball games. And Donaghy's relationship with Scott Foster is something that we need to investigate today in 2020.
Did you get a chance to talk to Scott Foster and explain the relationship with Tim and Scott Foster?
So Tim and Scott Foster entered the NBA the same year in 1994. They were best friends throughout their 13 years in the NBA. They, during the peak of the scandal, exchanged 134 phone calls in 5 months. On the phone that the FBI said Donaghy was using for gambling-related purposes, and both of them, their excuse was kind of like, oh, we just called to shoot it, right? And they were talking for 2 minutes at a time. So there's a lot of things that don't add up with their relationship.
Are they talking prior to games?
Yes.
Night of games?
Yes. And immediately after Donaghy would talk with his bookie or the middleman, Tommy Martino, he would often call Foster. So the phone records are highly suspicious. And yeah, I've not gotten a chance to talk with Scott Foster, but I would absolutely love to. And he's got a lot of questions to answer from this that he's never had to. And that was, again, part of just how the NBA brilliantly swept this under the rug and moved on. And there's a lot of people, the NBA, Scott Foster, Mark Cuban, that need to answer questions about this scandal.
How many games is Tim Donaghy accused of fixing?
So we know that Donaghy was betting on games that he refereed from 2003 to 2007. He refereed 260 games in that time frame, and I think all those games were compromised in some way or some form. I don't think he started betting on games and then took any games off. So 260 games over the course of 4 years that just Donaghy alone was betting. But what's fascinating is that Donaghy had no idea. He was betting with a couple of select people, but he had no idea how big this ballooned. By the end of it, the Gambino family, which is the biggest crime family in New York, or one of the biggest huge gambling syndicates throughout Philadelphia, New York, were cognizant that Donaghy was fixing games. And so more and more people became aware of the scheme, and more people started betting on Tim Donaghy games when they got word of which side he picked. And by the end of this thing, there was millions upon millions of dollars moving for each of Donaghy's games. And that last season, hundreds of millions were moving just on his games.
In the latest episode that comes out today, you talk with the FBI agent, Phil Scala, and you describe him as one of the most respected agents in the FBI's history and the agent who oversaw the investigation. What were some of the things that were revealed?
Oh, man, so much. So Phil Scala was generous enough to sit down with us. It took a while to convince him to do so. And I think the biggest revelation, so the NBA signed a $7.4 billion TV deal, and they signed it really what we found out, according to Scala, is that they signed it 5 days after learning from the FBI that the Donaghy scandal was coming down the pike. Now, $7.4 billion deals take months and months and months to negotiate. This wasn't like they just rushed you know, that this just happened in 5 days and they just went to signature. They've been working this deal for a long time, but it really raises some eyebrows that they might have rushed this deal to the finish line upon hearing about the Donaghy scandal coming down the pike. And that for me is something that, again, the NBA has never had to answer for. Scala says some fascinating things throughout, but
did ESPN and Turner know about the Donaghy investigation?
Turner, their state, Sal Petruzzi, who I believe was their VP of communications at the time, said specifically that they did not know about the Donaghy allegations. And ESPN, John Skipper, I believe, I'm not sure if he commented on the fact whether they knew or not, but it seems pretty clear that they did not inform their TV partners.
Do you think that gambling still exists with referees in the NBA today, Tim?
Well, that's a great question. That's what we need to get to the bottom of. And that's what we've gotten a little more transparency. We've gotten the two-minute report, that, you know, the NBA gives us as fans, probably just to frustrate us even more. But we really need to vet referees a lot more than we currently do. We probably need them to open up their accounting, or their checkbooks, their bank accounts for forensic analysis. We need to really understand, because if referee X, some small time referee, you know, his brother puts $5,000 in a game and he's going to kick the referee back, you know, $5,000, $10,000 for fixing a game. We have no way to vet that. That could easily still be happening. And we have no idea. We have no real policing of the NBA's police. And that's a problem. And we've never really gotten there fully.
Who, if out of everybody you could interview, who do you want to interview?
I think Scott Foster would probably be number one. Cuban would be number two.
Has Foster said anything?
Foster, right after this came out, back in 2007, 2008, you know, said that he would love to talk more about it, and never really had to. But I would love to interview Foster, Cuban, and Dick Pivetta.
Now,
Dick Pivetta is another guy.
Why Cuban? You've mentioned him three or four times throughout this.
So Cuban, if you look at the 2006 finals, that's probably the most controversial NBA finals that's ever been played. And we present a lot of evidence that the referees did not like Mark Cuban. And so now we have to look at, okay, so the referees didn't like Mark Cuban. They didn't like him because he wanted the system, the refereeing system, to be overhauled. Mm-hmm. And it was going to cost them money and likely cost them, you know, a lot of the perks that they've become accustomed to. And Cuban's talked about referees throughout, right? But he's never really talked about this scandal. And he's never talked about how deep he thought it went. And I really want to talk with Mark about those things, because I think he's got insight that the rest of us don't have. He's been in the weeds for 20 plus years. He's been the guy for the NBA that was shouting from the hilltops, there is a problem. And then this all has come out, and we've reached out to Mark. He's been very amenable via email, but he has has refused to come on, which is understandable. But yeah, I want to talk with Mark. But here's the thing, Dan, Mark Cuban, the Mavericks are valued, I believe, around $2 billion. And if this scandal would have erupted in a way that it could have in 2007, yeah, I mean, they might be worth $1.2 billion. And so if you're looking at Mark Cuban and the money involved, I understand why he's not talking to us, but I really would love to talk to him, because I think his insight would be hugely valuable.
How many more episodes do you have?
We got one more. Today was episode 9. This episode is really the climax. This is what we've been building up to. Episode 10 is an epilogue where we reflect, and we really, you know, the question you just asked is huge. Where are we today? Has the system gotten better? How do we make it better? How do we as fans really believe in the integrity in the NBA and in the integrity of these basketball games going forward? That's what, if there's anything that could come out of this podcast, and if Adam Silver ever listens to this, I think we as fans just want that integrity. That's such a big word in the NBA. And I really hope that people in the NBA front office listen to this and make some much needed adjustments.
Haven't heard from Adam Silver, have you?
I'm not. I would love to. I'd love to talk with Adam. I have a tremendous amount of respect for him and for his leadership and for what he's done for the NBA. And I think the last 6+ years under Adam Silver were a lot different than the previous 30 years in all the best ways.
Tim, good to talk to you. And congrats on the podcast. Good luck with that final episode next week.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it.